there, and those gravel trains every year would make a tremendous amount of money, and you'd have an efficient run operation, but I don't think it'd be much good to the rest of the state of Alaska. You know, let me picture the railroad as it's been operating under the Federal Service. We deal with multi-layers of management. The Alaska Railroad Management here on the railroad doesn't run the railroad. The Federal Railroad Administration doesn't run the railroad either. They run all of them run part of it. The Department of Transportation runs part of it, and as far as input into management. And you know, we're affected by decisions of Office of Management and Budget and various other agencies. So if the state creates an authority which is envisioned by these bills that have been introduced, Bill 512 and 352, I think you've already on step to efficient management of the railroad by eliminating all those other multiple layers. So I think that that's a first step and a good step. You know, with the talk that we talked about earlier, that the problems with the contract are the employees of the railroad. I think as long as, you know, we don't try to sharpshoot each other, the employees and the state-owned railroad, why we're going to be in good shape. But if every little problem we run into, especially in the interpretation of the law, and this has to be litigated in court, we're going to see some frustrations. And I think the mood of the employees is we trust the people whom represent us, and we trust the people who are going to operate the new railroad, so that I don't think we can anticipate that there's going to be those problems. And as far as the efficiency of the railroad goes, and operation goes, that'll have to come with the decisions of the people. If they want a railroad that is really efficient and is just simply going to haul over the same line that we've been hauling over, outside of some money for needed improvements and upgrading the roadbed and stuff, why they probably could become real competitive under the new state corporation or whatever, and operate and compete in the private sector without any problems at all. As long as, you know, we get the same breaks as the truckers, because we maintain our roads and bridges, the state Highway Department maintains their roads and bridges. What I'm trying to say, and I hope I made that clear, first of all, you're going to have to define what you want. If you want, you know, daily service into Whittier, and daily service into Whittier is not going to pay for itself, then you're going to have to subsidize that. If you want passenger service to the rail belt areas that you have right now, and that passenger service will not support itself, then you're going to have to pay for that passenger service. I think it would be unfair to ask your railroad, your new railroad, and judge it on its performance if it was forced to continue services that there was no, you know, that weren't economically feasible. I would hope everybody in the state would agree with that statement.
Now, Chairman, just in conclusion, then I'm really want to thank you for saying that, because, you know, that's the real problem that I have with it. I don't want people, the public at large, to think that we're going to be acquiring and then operating a profit-making railroad, and then down the road to find out that it's not, and then mysteriously everybody opens their eyes thinking that we hoodwinked them. I want everybody to know what we're getting into up front, no questions about it, that if it's going to be a subsidized public conveyance system, whatever, we're going to subsidize passenger traffic, so forth and so on, we're going to subsidize the links between in this case, you're suggesting Potter and Seward and north of Mansu, then we get into subsidizing it and we provide it. But if we're not, then we ought to go one way or the other. But I don't think we have to fool anybody about what we're doing.
Well, if I may respond to that, you know, I think the first thing we'd have is if we chopped off the railroad in those areas, we'd have a tremendous, you know, public outcry. I think the public knows what they want, but they don't know what they want to pay for.
I think you're right.
Representative Fritz.
Mr. Britton, I appreciate very much the clarity with which you explained some of the difficulties that are facing us as committee people. Now, down here where I happen to be the representative of the people, you can see there isn't a great deal of interest in the railroad by the sparse attendance here as compared to what we saw in a town of 1,800, namely Seward, yesterday, where we were, I think, almost 4 hours hearing public testimony. But the reason I'm interested in this is so that I can explain to the people I attempt to represent down here how important the railroad is for all the people of the state, and that they should have some input into the reasons for the repurchase and what good it will do. I think it was especially important for you to bring out the aspect of the non-profitability of the passenger service and some of the spur line services, such as the one that exists through Whittier. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Fritz. Are there any further questions, Mr. Burton? Mr. Burton, I'd like to express my appreciation of you being here. I think you've clarified a great many things for me and been able to let us get some of our questions out that probably only one with expertise like you have could answer for us. So, Representative Boone, do you have another statement?
Just one thing, along with what Representative Szymanski said, and what you just said, the public, what was that again, the public what?
Well, I just said, basically, you know, they talk about they want the railroad to be operated efficiently, and they want it to be, profit-orientated and everything. But I says if you did that and you cut the line off at...
That was what I meant.
I said Potter and also at Matanuska, where is probably the most efficient part of the railroad is run because of the gravel haul. That the rest of the state, which is served by the railroad, you hear public outcry over it. They know what service they want, but they don't know what they want to pay for.
Well, that's the problem you have now. I don't think the last statement is quite as correct as perhaps we're not telling them what that cost is going to be because we don't know yet. We're saying 60 million, we're saying 22 million for the railroad and up to 60 million for some OSHA requirements and a few little other things. And I guess what I'm trying to say is, and I think Representative Szymanski and also Representative Fritz is saying, that this could go 200 or 300 million before we're done. We just listened to a guy down there, a gentleman down there in Seward say, that crane, that boom, that stiff leg is bad news. It's built in 1935, 1937. The bulldogs are coming apart. He gave us a whole list of stuff that we didn't even know. I had to ask what the heck a bulldog,
bull rail.
A bull rail is, thank you. And so as a result of it, we've got all these things, all this money to go up. The public should be aware that it could cost this. And it is not going to be a profitable operation when you get into it. And they better be sure they understand that we're going to have to subsidize it for quite a little while here until if and when we can get all our coal coming out, our barley coming out, our minerals coming out, and utilizing that railroad. I don't see that it's going to make any money on a passenger service unless we put a gay 90s three or four bar cars on and dance and girls and bring the tourists in and show them a good time and bring them down and have a good time. Would you not agree with someone of that?
Well, let me go back and say this, and I want to go back over the history of the railroad a little bit, as I know it and have studied it and talked about it before. You know, let's be realistic. For those people that don't know, during the period that the railroad has been operated by the federal government, they put $200 million in it in subsidies, and that includes money put in by the earthquake at the time of the earthquake. That's approximately what it takes to clean and maintain highways, for 1 year period. Now, but there's another aspect of that, and this is how you measure profit sometimes. You can't see it in dollars and cents, but the question has to be asked, what would it cost the federal government to build the Dew Line without the Alaska Railroad? What would it cost them to build Allison Air Force Base without the railroad? What would it cost them to build all their military installations and everything that they built without the railroad? Where would Usabelli Coal be? Where would the jobs in Healy? Where would the city of Anchorage be had it not been for the Alaska Railroad? There's value in just having the railroad here. The railroad has not cost the federal government any money. The spinoffs from having the railroad here has been a savings to the federal government. I think that's pretty clear.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much for that statement. That was extremely enjoyable to hear. Do we have any other questions, Mr. Burton? Thank you, Jack, very much for attending.
Yes, and I'd like to thank the committee.
On my witness list, I have mostly observers signed up. However, Stan, you have a question mark. Could we have something out of you? Stan is all of you know as the borough mayor. And we'd like to have him testify for the committee.
After listening to this last speaker, who was very knowledgeable, I hesitate to come forward at all. But I do have some questions, if I may. I didn't get here early. I had some reasons I wasn't able to get here. And you may have covered some of these, but I apologize if you did.
I doubt that we did, Stan, so go ahead. But even if we did, I'm sure that repetition sometimes makes for a better understanding.
Thank you, Betty. As I say, mostly what I have are questions. We made a study, for instance, of the condition. Do we know the condition of the road bed? Will it handle a heavy continued load of gravel or mining weights on without considerable expense in the care? Has that been done? I don't know.
Steve?
Yeah, condition assessment has been done of the railroad. It was found in Jack, maybe you can clear this up too, but it was found to be in good condition. I don't recall the class of maintenance that it fits into, but as a medium-duty railroad, it's in good condition, which means it's adequate to handle its existing freight loads, that sort of thing.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Fritz.
Steve, what is the whale rate per yard of the present rails? 115? Okay, 115. Well, if it's 115 per yard, it's all right for the medium type railroad that young Steve has just spoken about. But in order to travel with the hoped for weights from the Yusa Valley coal fields, those rails will have to be changed to 132 pound rails per yard. But that doesn't have to be done overnight or all at once. It can be phased out over a period of time. Also, Madam Chairman, it's my understanding that many of the cross ties have to be changed, since I believe most of the changing has been done at 1948 or before. And there's been a new type of cross tie developed principally by the Florida East Coast and then being adopted at other railroads that are made of concrete. And their life is estimated at 50 years, although they have gone through 10 years of usage up to now. That again isn't something that has to be undertaken at once, so that the treasury will have to be emptied in order to change the rails or change the cross ties overnight. It can be phased in according to the weight. Does that answer it, Stan?
Yeah, I think it does. I've heard a little bit of what you're saying. That's why I had a question there. But I didn't know how soon that would have to be done. And that did answer. Thanks, Doc. Another question I have, this is, I guess, basic. We've heard a lot that the federal government's going to quit handling the railroad. I would understand that that might be a little misleading. Do we know that the federal government is going to quit the running the railroad if the state doesn't take it over? I believe that would take an act of Congress, wouldn't it?
No. The federal government can fund or not fund, the same as the state government can fund or not fund. And I think the way that the federal government is planning on doing that is the fact that they will not fund the railroad after a certain point in time.
Do we have a time that we know that they're going to stop funding if we didn't take it over, or is that just...
Steve, what is the date the federal government has said they will quit funding the Alaska Railroad?
Well, appropriations time comes in October, and it's thought that after October of this year, with the federal budget deficit and other issues, that they will not put any money in for the Alaska Railroad this time around. There's a provision in the bill for other disposition if the state doesn't take it. The federal government needs to give preference to an owner or to an operator, purchaser, I guess, that would operate it as a railroad. But if the state doesn't buy it, the federal government says they're going to get rid of it. That essentially says that they're surplusing it or they're putting it into surplus property disposal. If that happens, all of the native claims, subsurface and surface, trigger. And the claims are sort of in a checkerboard pattern on different sides of the right-of-way. The amount of land that would be disputed in that case would probably be 500 parcels or greater. It's conceivable that it would never be able to be operated as a railroad just from the land disputes that would arise on it, let alone the fact that no other purchaser has stepped forward to this date and said we're interested in operating the railroad. So on land issues alone, it would be complex, but also from the standpoint of operations and profitability.
Representative Stransky.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing that up, because kind of, I was thinking the same question after Ted Stevens addressed the legislature the other day. I started wondering about it again, because he basically, well, not basically, he made some statement to the effect that if we're not going to deal with it soon, let him know so he can take care of it in the budget. And I wasn't too sure exactly what he meant by that and or where we were going, but what I hear Steve saying is that it doesn't sound like the senator could even take care of it if he wanted to. Is that right?
Well, I can't speak for the whole situation, but the political realities, the way things look in Washington, D.C., here's an offer made to the state to purchase it. Congress has acted and provided for disposition. If that's turned down, how willing might Congress be, a legislative body, to say, all right, we're going to continue to fund it, we're going to run it. State, we weren't really serious about stopping it. We're going to keep it going anyway. Political realities, I don't think they'd be able to do that. I don't think they'd be able to continue to fund it, but that's just a guess. Actually.
I mean, I heard Ted Stevens right, didn't I?
I didn't hear him say that. I didn't hear the speaker.
Representative Stransky, I think you heard him right, but not quite. He said he would try to take care of it. But then that would mean rising the ire of Senator Mitzenbaum and bringing the whole thing before Congress again. And he made that statement on the floor of the House.
In other words, it looks to me, maybe I'm getting the picture wrong, it's a political assumption that they, through lack of funding, that they probably wouldn't continue to operate it or would cut down the funding level, at least. Is that what I'm... Is that
yes. Stan, you're basically correct there. That should the state not clearly indicate to the federal government by the 14th of July this year whether or not they intend to buy the railroad, then probably in October, which is the, as Steve said, the budget time, the federal government would defund the railroad, not put any money into it, therefore just automatically mothballing it. Representative McBride?
I think we have to look at this like we would be as legislators. Obviously, he would like to know as soon as possible if we're not going to take it. And he knows the importance of the Alaska Railroad to the state of Alaska, so he would obviously try to work as hard as he could to save all or part or some part of it and keep it running, possibly asking for another year's funds till they try to find some other way to do. There's a whole number of things he could do, knowing the importance of the railroad, and obviously would try to do that the same as we would if we were in his place. And I think that's what he was really trying to tell us.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like that they wouldn't just cut it off, but they would start looking pretty seriously. That brings up another question, though. We're saying they would cut out the subsidy for it. How much of a subsidy does it take to operate it now?
May I take just a moment, please? I'd like everyone to know that Senator Fisher has been with us. He has another meeting he has to go to. We're sorry, Paul. We wish you could stay with us, but thanks for joining us for a while.
You'll have the testimony in writing.
Yes, we will have speed date.
Okay, thanks. Madam Chairman, in response,
Representative Smansky.
Didn't we, I think we heard at least one presentation that the subsidy varies anywhere from 7 to 10 million over the last 10 years. It varies in that range. So I think, in all honesty, we look at, assuming we have the same railroad operating into the future, we're looking at approximately $900 million over the next 10 years, assuming that all the other factors are, but, you know, that's just ballparking it.
I think Steve has some figures on that.
In some years, the railroad hasn't gotten subsidy, and it's continued to operate. I believe it's the last 4 years, the railroad's gotten approximately $17 million, something like that. So the amount of subsidy does vary, but the subsidy is mostly for capital improvements. Operations have operated, at least on paper, in the black. So it's expenses for operations are covered by revenues from operations. So I don't want to give the impression that on October 1st, 1984, if the state doesn't buy it, if there are no more appropriations, the railroad will stop. It'll probably continue to run just on its operations, on its revenues. But the long-term future, and even the short-term future of the railroad is in question. But even perhaps more important than funding is if the state doesn't take it, the native land claims are triggered, and they're not applicable if the state accepts the railroad. But if the state doesn't, the land claims alone would probably be more of a prohibition for any other operator than budgetary.
But that wouldn't be a problem as long as the federal continued to operate the land claims.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Fritz.
It's true, I believe, Stan, that even if the state takes it over, the native land claims will not be triggered. If the state does not take it over, they will be. Have I got that right, Steve?
Well, in certain cases, now native land claims are pretty complex thing, but there are surface and subsurface claims that are triggered. Some of the surface claims by the village corporations will be triggered if and when the state accepts the railroad. The subsurface, through provisions in the federal transfer legislation, would not be triggered. So you might have a case where Cook Inlet Regional Corporation selects the subsurface rights for 600 acres in downtown Anchorage and gets that if the railroad is surplus, but they would not get the surface estate, so they could not charge for surface operations. But if you break the surface of the ground, they most definitely could do that. And the other thing is that the railroad whoever that had surface estate could not stop them from coming in to get at something that's in the subsurface. In other words, if they wanted to put in a gravel pit in the middle of the railroad yard in downtown Anchorage, there's little legally that could be done, of course, restraining orders and all the other sort of thing. But you know, the point again being is that it's a very complex thing, and for a purchaser other than the state, or even if it goes into surplus property, it's a very long, drawn-out legal battle.
In other words, even if the state took it over, there would be problems with the native land claims.
Well, there are some, right, but certainly not to the extent of the full compliance with ANCSA.
For instance, at least locally, some of the native corporations claim their subsurface rights start at the bottom of the grass. In other words, the gravel, even under a road, we can't build without getting a subsurface situation, which could affect that as well, I presume.
I don't know yet.
It varies again.
Of course, I don't know if that'll hold up either, but they're claiming it anyway. In other words, do we have any idea what the costs or problems will be on the native land claims if we take it over?
Disputed, if I may, Madam Chairman.
Please do.
Disputed lands are roughly 4,000 out of a total of 38,000 acres. 3,800 is a number. Out of those, The first thing that happens is you do a test whether or not it was in actual use during the time of determination for ANCSA, which is 1971. So any railroad lands that were used by the railroad, actually used in 1971, are not available for native selection. And so the right-of-way goes completely. Okay, the right-of-way is kept intact because that's been actually used. Certain gravel yards that have been in actual use in 1971, or reserves that had been opened up. You take a cat and you blade across the top of a gravel reserve, that's actual use because you've disturbed the surface and you're proceeding towards extraction. So that sort of situation is taken care of. It boils down to roughly 1,800 acres that are in dispute. And most of those are in the Eklutna region just north of Anchorage. And some of them are rock reserves, and some of them are gravel reserves. There's some other smaller parcels further up the line near Palmer and Wasilla. Nenana is another area that there's a reasonably large dispute, but at that time the barge line was in operation. So Nenana lands in the barge operation, when the barge operation was part of the railroad, was in actual use also, so that falls out. And the portion that is really an issue is relatively small in terms of the total 38,000 acres of railroad land that would be transferred to the state. And most of those, too, the state would need to sign off before any transfer is performed or is accomplished. and members of the administration and the federal government that are working on this have been negotiating with the native corporations to try and settle those claims.
In other words, we don't have any idea yet what the cost would be on those.
No, no, I don't think anyone can give you an actual total figure. Yeah. Representative Samansky?
I'd like to know, Stan, if you could, if it's possible, to what is your feeling with regard to the railroad acquisition as a policy statement by the state as to whether or not it can or should be acquired, and if so, how do you feel it should be acquired and what we should do with it, and so forth, both as an individual and as elected official for the area down here, which is primarily kind of unbiased to a certain degree. I mean, you don't have to make railroads run through your backyard.
Don't forget sewers in our area.
Oh, okay. I keep forgetting about sewers.
We don't do that.
You haven't got a loop yet.
yeah, it's kind of putting me on the spot. That's why I'm asking these questions, really. I really have some concerns that, number one, it seems the publicity and all that isn't what you people are dealing with, but what we see at this end seems to be that saying, well, we're either going to have to buy the railroad or the government's going to scrap it type of thing. As somebody else pointed out, I believe it's you, Mr. Booth, that the costs, you heard figures of costs from 30, 60 million on up to hundreds of millions of dollars before we get it operational. That certainly, I don't think the public has an idea of what it's going to cost this time, and I think it's very important to them. And I think the previous speaker had a good sense when he said the public knows what it wants, but it doesn't know what it wants to pay for it. Or what it's going to have to pay for it. I think they want the railroad to continue to operate. I don't think there's a strong feeling, at least in our general area here, whether the state does it or the federal does it. I think it would be my own personal feeling at this time, by the time this meeting is over, I may feel entirely different, is that if the federal government continues to operate as it does, I see no reason for the state to get involved and start spending money on the railroad to just for the pride of taking over our Alaska Railroad. And I'm not sure everybody's in agreement with that feeling at all. I think, again, it comes down to, yes, we want to run the railroad. We don't want it stopped. We're not sure the federal government would stop it. But we don't know what it's going to cost, and we don't know what we just don't have an idea whether it's beyond what we should pay for it or not. Does that answer?
Well, it kind of does, because in Seward yesterday, we heard almost unanimously the indication that any cost, and I guess the best comparison you can make is what the current costs are associated with the railroad, and let's do it, because it is a vital transportation link, and it has a lot of interest to the people of the Seward area and along the rail belt. Now, from your perspective, is it a vital system of transportation to your area? Does it is it the best interest to your public to have it operate
directly on this side of the peninsula? I would say no. On the other side of the peninsula, I would have to say yes. At the present time, again, I think what I'd like to know, and I don't suppose anybody knows this time, is the question that was brought up earlier. What do we plan for the railroad? Do we plan on extending it to the Canadian border? Do we plan on extending it to cover mines down in the coastal area? Do we plan on extending it down this area to meet in the industrial area? I don't know those things, and maybe somebody has an idea, a long-range plan of what they hope to do with it, or do you just plan on running it as it is? Or do you plan on cutting it back to where it's efficient? I don't know.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Fritz.
In reply to what you said, Stan, the extension of the railroad would depend upon present or future economic viability. Just to extend it to the Canadian border for no reason, just to get it to the Canadian border, would be spoken against. But extending it over to the Beluga coal fields, if that should be developed, or contracts were reached between the state of Alaska and Taiwan or Japan or any other nation, but that would be fine. Also, there'd be no point in extending a spur here over the future if it is ever built. Turning a causeway would be fine if there was something down here that would pay for such an extension. So So, as you say, it's a matter of question. I don't think that is really before us now. It's taking what exists now and spending it with the least economic drain possible on our state budget, our state treasury. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Szymanski wasn't finished. Go ahead.
I just wanted to see if I clearly understood you, Stan. I know I don't want to put you completely on the hot seat here, but
it's all right.
If we could acquire it, operate it at no more subsidy than is currently being advanced by the federal government, I understand your position to support the acquisition in the interest of public conveyance of transportation. I understand you're in support of that.
Yes, I would have to say, with these assumptions that you made, that we could operate it with no more than the present, $17 million in 4 years that you mentioned, something on that order of having it. I wouldn't have any objection to it at all. Of course, I haven't studied as much as you people have, or as the gentleman before me has, and I don't even know, but what the federal government might have expanded considerably with different thinking in the Department of Transportation or something. So I would have to agree with what you said.
Representative Abood?
Yes, Dan. You know, the federal government's had this railroad since 1914, and we still had 500 miles of it coming to us over what they said they were going to build.
Is that right?
So they haven't built that 500 miles yet. So we're talking about expansion. And I'm talking, it's difficult to bring up all of the bad things without somebody saying, geez, that guy doesn't want anything to do with the railroad. That's not true.
No,
I don't think anybody's really studied it and said, what here would be the effect if we decided not to buy the railroad? What is that effect?
I agree.
Now, secondly, if we decide to expand the railroad under new lines, we've all got to realize that those new lines, regardless of where they may extend, have got to go through other native land claims again, other private property again. Do you think we got to fight now? Where do we get into that? So, I think if we're going to buy the railroad's got to continue to exist under the present lines, the way they're going now, set up a good corporation or whatever we're going to set it up and run it under the existing conditions. And when the mines come online, where the railroad goes, and where it doesn't go, we're going to have to use trucks, bring it to the railroad, and so on, and work it from that direction.
I guess
that's the way it appears to me. But I think we've got to own the railroad. I haven't got all the reasons why we ought to do it. I'd like to put the federal government, their feet to the fire and say, okay, friends, you don't want it? We don't want it now. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. Probably that's foolhardy. But I'd like to know some of those questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I guess that was really my question, or my answer was there, that we there's so many things it doesn't seem like we do know, like you said there. But I guess what I was really asking was that we don't have any plans at the present time to, we're not buying it in order to extend it, we're buying it in order to operate it. Isn't that, am I right?
That's what
I
would say.
I think you could assume that.
Okay.
Representative
McBride? Yeah, I think that that's what we're all assuming at this point. However, I kept saying this right from the beginning, and I was glad to see Jack say the same thing. We've got to remember, and you're the borough mayor here, and when 100 people fill this room, it kind of makes you look at things differently than when you're home all by yourself. And so we've got to remember that once the state buys it, it does belong to all the people of the state of Alaska. And we keep hearing, and I don't think this is quite fair, is this economic viability and everything. If enough people in the state of Alaska were screaming at us or filling our rooms, telling us that it ought to be built to the border of Nome or the border of Canada, we probably would do it. So, I don't think it's quite fair to always be stressing that economic viability once it belongs to all the people of the state of Alaska.
Yeah, I think we all understand the political realities there when it comes to, once we own it, the possibility of extending it.
I was just going to say, Stan, distinguished representative from Southeastern Alaska down there. I don't know how many ferries we started off with on that system, but I assume it was, what, two or three? In any case, we started off with a couple of ferries, and we've definitely got more than two ferries going right now, so it would be a little misleading to assume that you're going to start off a railroad with current rolling stock cannot expand at some time in the future.
Yeah. Steve, in fact,
there's a good chance it could, real easy.
Steve, did you have a clarification?
Yeah, Mr. Thompson, I thought of a couple of different things in answer to a couple of your questions. If all of the native claimed land presently were not resolved, or if everything went against the state at this point, and we know that that shouldn't happen, but assuming it does, it would cost approximately $250,000 per year for the railroad to haul gravel from other gravel and other construction aggregates from other pits that they have into the areas that's now needed. That would be an increased cost over if they were able to use everything that they've got close by. And that's one figure that was looked at. Another thing is that there has been quite a bit of study on this, and there was a very limited amount of work done on alternatives. If there were no railroad, if tomorrow morning we got up and pulled the switch and there was no more railroad, what would happen? How would the state be impacted for transportation? And in as much as 60% of the revenue for the railroad presently comes from that gravel haul from Palmer into Anchorage, it's conceivable that sort of traffic would have to continue, and it would have to go over the existing road system. Department of Transportation gave some figures to the committee last year, and I believe the year before also, on upgrading that road to a four-lane road. And I don't recall the figure exactly, but it was somewhere between $60 to $75 million, and they had talked about even updating that only in one direction, which was more. So for upgrading that particular section of roadway alone to handle just the gravel that goes over it, $60 to $70 million right there. They didn't go a lot further than just looking at that. There were some other areas looked at, being a lot of the other things that the railroad hauls are heavy iron pipe and metal pipe that can't go over the highway or because of length or weight restrictions, particularly in the pipeline. If that were to all go over the park's highway, there would be an increased maintenance cost there also. So it does haul bulk commodities of large weights that would have a detrimental impact on other portions of the transportation system as they presently exist. So,
I appreciate that. I guess what we're going to have to do, Betty, from what he says there, being if they cut out the railroad, we'll just have to start barging the gravel from here and save that cost of the park's highway. We got lots of gravel. I don't think they're going to cut out the railroad, whether we get out of it or not, but it may be more feasible for us to operate it, as I said. That's just my personal feeling at the present time. Also, in this somewhere, I just read through it rather rapidly. Doesn't it say something to the effect that the railroad, once it's set up, the commission, et cetera, will be self-sustaining? Would it be, I don't remember seeing where it would be receiving subsidies. Now, I probably read that wrong, but am I incorrect in that?
I'll have Steve answer that.
Okay, in the policy section of the bill, it says that
Says it will raise, have the ability to raise capital, issuing obligation bonds, et cetera, but it doesn't say anything about the state subsidies there.
Okay. There's a second.
Representative Fritz.
This question is Steve. If the state takes it over, then of course the state is responsible for funding its operation. Isn't that true, Lord?
That depends on the type of management structure that's set up to operate it. If you say that we're setting up a corporation that has a legal existence separate from the state, and it's an independent corporation, and also in other sections of the bill you say that the debts of the corporation are the debts of the corporation and not of the state, it really points to that this corporation has to stand on its own two feet, or else the state, or else it ceases to exist. In policy statements, it says that it's to be self-supporting, but there's another section in the bill, which I can't seem to find right now, that says supported when necessary by state appropriation. So rather than having the state, I wish I could find that, rather than having the railroad fall apart or go bankrupt or one thing or another. there's another section where it's more explicit than that. But it, that's the type of thing.
That part does cover it to some extent. That you recommend to the corporation recommends to the legislature and the governor any tax, financing, or financial arrangement the corporation considers appropriate for expansion or extension and operation of the Alaska Railroad. So that would be one place in there where it would cover, where the state could come in and assist the corporation.
I'm sure you're right on that. I mean, I know it says that there. I read that too. But in this, other words, in this bill, don't we have a little bit of question in that it also says the corporation shall be exclusively responsible for the management of the financial legal obligations of the Alaska Railroad. That's page 2. A.
Yeah, that's not body of law. That's strictly the policy section.
Well, in other words, our policy is different from our body of law. That's kind of what I was getting at on this. And
right.
I think that
right.
Need to be cleaned up in the bill once it's... I would think it would. It would seem to be there in conflict.
Well, let me just...
Representative Stefanski.
It's kind of a... You're good. I like to stand there. That policy section, purpose and findings, is kind of the dressing. It really doesn't, it's not embedded in the body of law that says that we follow it. It's on there to make it look good and sound good and talk good, but when you get down to it, it doesn't carry any weight. You can't go back there and tell them guys once they start running over budget that there's any way to keep from going after the state treasury on it. So you're perfectly correct. If there is provisions within the statute itself that allows to go in tax and take care of capital projects and so forth, maybe needed hurricane gulch or whatever.
Yeah, I was sure that would have that way. I mean, but on page 3, for instance, under Article 1, you even have there in one paragraph what seems to be a little bit of a conflict. The corporation, that's line 7, the corporation is a legal existence independent of and separate from the state. Then it goes on, next sentence, the exercise of the corporation's powers provided in this chapter is considered an essential government function of the state. Those two sentences are just in conflict, aren't they?
Steve?
I don't want to debate it because I can't answer you directly, but we say in the legislation that the corporation has a legal existence independent of and separate from the state. Is a municipality that has a legal existence independent of and separate from the state, and yet it is an essential government function. The state ferry system is presently a line agency, but it could be set up to have a legal existence separate from the state in under the heading of being a public corporation. So, I've said this before and people tease me about it, but these are some legal buzzwords for the attorneys to say that the corporation has the exclusive responsibility of managing and operating the railroad. But you're right, and we have some attorneys that are taking a look at this.
Madam Chairman?
I knew that was a dispute, that's why I had Steve answer that question. Representative Boone?
On page two, line 22, kind of bothers me a little bit in there where it says the best possible combination of types and levels of safe, efficient, and economical transportation can be provided that is necessary to meet the overall needs of the state, supported when necessary by state investment.
I had a question mark on that paragraph.
You can take that investment, you can call that anything you want to call it. I call it bailing out, because it may be necessary to do it, not necessarily bailing out in that respect, but to put more money into it in order to keep it operational, if you will, whether it be profitable or otherwise, because investment means two different things here.
You're absolutely right. Representative Friends?
Stan, when I was in Community and Regional Affairs, there was piece of legislation brought up about the creation of a mine up in the Kotzebue area, which is a sort of a pseudo, semi, MI, quasi, or pseudo borough of some kind, which was going to be given the authority of issuing bonds, which was independent of and separate from the state government. Well, we got a couple of high-powered lawyers up there, and said no matter what kind of complicated language you use, if that pseudo borough failed in its obligations to meet the financing of the bonds, the state would ultimately have to pay them off. So I think the same thing is here. applicable, that if we had a separate corporation that was running a railroad and it failed to meet its obligation, there's no way that the state could sidestep it, no matter what it says in this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Representative Booth.
Just to follow up one other statement in here, I can't find it at the moment, but we're pledging the full faith and credit of the state to Booth.
No, we are not. That's not anywhere in the bill.
Well, I'll find it again, Madam Chairman.
In fact, I think it implies the opposite of that.
Yes, it says that we will not, the corporation will not be backed by the full faith and credit of the state. Am I correct, Steve?
That's correct. Evidently, I made a mistake in my statement. First time this year, Stan.
Wish I could say that.
Representative McBride?
Well, you point out the same bill that Representative Fitz was talking about, also talked about a moral obligation. And being this is an instrument of the state would have a moral obligation. What that amounts to, listening to our high-powered lawyers that talk to us, means that no, legally, the state doesn't have to pay that back. But yes, your interest rates will probably go up and your credit rating will go down, and it'll probably pay you in the long run as a state to pay for those obligations. So I think that it was a lot of complicated language about what moral obligation is, but that's what it amounted to, basically.
Thank you.
Yeah,
comes back then to another thing in here. It says it will, as I understand it, it would bond everything independent of the state, but it won't have the state bond rating. Is that it? It'll just be mortgaging its own property?
You're entirely correct on that.
Okay.
Chairman Cato, can
yes.
I make a statement for a minute? You know, I hear everybody talking about what it's going to cost the state to operate the railroad, but not once have I heard what the state is going to get when they, for this $22.3 million. Within the Greater Anchorage Borough, they're going to get over $1 billion worth of property. $1 billion worth of property. If you put money into this railroad at $1,000 a day, it would still be a hell of a good buy after 25 or 30 or 40 or 50 years.
Thank you, Jack.
I had a question on page 2 again, on 18, number D. The corporation may carry out its responsibilities on a self-sustaining basis. We don't say it shall, we don't say it won't, we say it may. I guess that's all right. Has that been brought up before?
Yeah, that's Jack's problem.
I'll forget it then. I'm sorry. I just went through this very fast. I had questions about. And I agree with the press statement there that there's an awful lot of land values with the railroad, but my question, I guess, is not whether we should purchase it or not, but I think people need to know, or would like to know more about what we're really getting into, as somebody else mentioned there. That's been answered. Within page 14, line 12, within 90 days after receiving a request under A of this section, the Commissioner of Natural Resources, by departmental order, shall classify that land for railroad purposes. In other words, once the Commissioner requests land, the Commissioner of Natural Resources wouldn't have any choice but to classify that land for railroad purposes. Is that what you mean?
Steve's shaking his head yes. And as you know, he's our principal source of information and has done most of the research on this. He said, yes, that is what it means.
Okay, I just wonder about that, but I guess that's what you're after, yeah. In other words, there wouldn't be any choice. The commissioner, the railroad commissioner would have the authority to really classify.
Representative Miller?
The way I read that,
90 days after request, the section, the Commissioner of Natural Resources and the Department shall either do one, classify the land, or go down to line 18, two, notify the corporation with a reason for refusal to classify the land.
Yeah, I wrote conflict here between those two sentences there, that shall, and then the other one, my next question, you hit it right there. I don't know, that's good.
The way I read that is within 90 days, he will either do one of two things. Tell him.
He shall, okay, I understand. You're right.
Or he shall notify them when he will not, so there is a limbo period of 5 years.
I see what you're saying, you're right, too. I was going at it too fast. I don't know if there are any other questions on there or not. You've answered an awful lot of questions there. Most of them that I have been answered that I've marked here. And I guess this must have been brought up before with the previous person, page 26, when the corporation may not enter into a collective bargaining agreement.
Yes, we discussed that quite at length.
Yeah, I think that's
not right. What line was that, Stan?
Chairman,
what line was that?
That last question was
yes.
Line, page 26, line 4.
The one we were discussing with Mr. Burton.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure when the mayor was talking about that, so, Madam Chairman.
Okay.
Do you have a question about that?
No, I...
Stan, I'd like to ask you to do something for the committee. And because I fully believe that if the state buys this railroad, the railroad then will become a part of the state of Alaska and an inheritance of all the people of Alaska. I also feel that even though various people do not live around along the rail belt, they do quite frequently enjoy some of the things that the rail brings in. However, what I would like you to do, if you could find an opportunity, is in your talking to people and things like this, try to make an assessment for us how the peninsula does feel about the railroad. They have a right to be heard, and I recognize that hearings quite frequently do not bring out all the people you want, irrespective of how well you advertise it. I do know that this hearing was very well advertised in this area. And so could I ask you to take responsibility as borough mayor to assess the situation, let us be aware of what the feelings of the peninsula are?
Within the best of my ability, I'd be glad to do that. And remember, the peninsula takes in Seward.
Yes. I don't ever forget that.
I'm sure you know, Betty.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Representative Fritz.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to tell you something and ask you something at the same time. I took a terrible amount of abuse over the telephone by POM and face-to-face because of my attitude towards what they thought was an effort to torpedo the royalty oil contracts. Of course, it turned out as I predicted it would, and that's a matter of record. But to come back to the matter at hand, I would very much like to know what the people of this area believe. And I think you have a closer association being living on the ground than I do, living 900 miles away. I realize also that if I had the money, I could get a Dittman survey run throughout the whole peninsula, including Seward, Madam Chairman, to find out what they think. But I lack those resources, and I would certainly appreciate people letting folks know through letters to the editor and by POMs and polite, I hope, conversations on the telephone, what their feelings are. So, thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Fritz.
Yeah, I did. I realize you took a beating on that one, Doc, and unfortunately, because they didn't understand the inner workings down there in the Juneau, which so often is true down here.
Include me in that statement also, will you, Stan?
What's that?
Include me in that statement.
I'll do that, although I don't think you got the beating he did out of it.
Oh, but I did.
Did you? Okay.
Still
about Nikiski? Mm-hmm.
It's still my district, but that wasn't where I got the
meeting
from.
Is that right? If I may ask one last question now, too. On the first page, again, this is the cover, what you call the cover step, toward the last there, it says, well, I
page what?
The first page.
Chairman.
One.
Line?
The 26. 25, 26, 27. But it says that we will eventually transfer the railroad to a private sector for its ownership or operation, which frankly I would question if we would ever do once we took it over. But if we're really serious about that, if it isn't just window dressing, maybe we should say to be looked at a specific date for this purpose. That was my last thought.
Okay.
I'm certain, on the transfer to a private entity.
Or at least
very good suggestion. Thank you very much for the stand.
Thank you, folks.
Representative McBride?
You are aware that this is the possibility until after 10 years.
Do we have, is there a 10-year cut off on, I wasn't aware, no.
Yeah, maybe Steve can better explain that.
There's a reversion clause, a 10-year reversion clause, that unless the state does certain things for over a period of 10 years, the railroad would revert back to the federal government.
Well, if our oil revenue keeps going down, it keeps costing more. Maybe that's not so bad.
It's only switched three times.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson, for your very helpful questions, suggestions, and observation. Well, I thank you very much for coming down here. I'm sorry we didn't have a better turnout. I apologize for Nikiski. Our road got kind of snowed in down there. In fact, I had to plow out before I could get out today. It was kind of an accumulation, and we got about 3 more inches.